Hello, and welcome to Ask the Mayor here on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. This week, we're talking with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Thanks so much for being with us. Because of our holiday schedule this week, we are pre-recording today's show, so we won't be able to take listener questions as the show is airing. But remember, you can always email questions at any time for any of our four mayors to ask at WBAA.org. We have the mayor on the line right now. Good afternoon, Mayor Barton, and happy holidays.
Good afternoon, Emily. Thank you, and happy holidays to you as well.
So we're talking about the future now. So technically, this show is airing on Christmas Eve. A Merry Christmas Eve to all. This is your final Ask the Mayor of 2020, and it's indeed the final Ask the Mayor of this entire year period. So you have the honor of taking us out of 2020.
That might be an honor, considering 2020.
Indeed.
You know, I think everybody's ready for 2021 for sure.
It's coming up fast. So I guess we'll just go ahead and start out with a COVID update for your area. The Indiana State Department of Health has officially moved Montgomery County into the red category on its color-coded metrics map for COVID-19. So first of all, I guess practically speaking, what does this change in the county's response to stopping the spread of the virus now that that's kind of been made official?
Well, certainly there are certain things that are laid out in the governor's directives, and those will be implemented, things such as limiting events to 25 or less if they can't be canceled. That's probably the biggest thing that people will see. There's some other steps that really kind of target senior-specific activities. For example, our park and rec will not be holding any senior-focused, senior-specific type of activities. And then the rec leagues are also spelled out in there. And for us, that was already kind of taken care of because of the timing. Our fall leagues were done, and we have put off registration for the spring leagues. So we don't have any, like rec league volleyball or co-ed volleyball, basketball, those kind of things going on right now. So those are the biggest things that people will see. If you look at what the governor's laid out, he does carve out religious services. So you certainly encouraging the churches to socially distance and try to do virtual services as much as possible, wear masks, those kind of things. But, then it's really left up to the locals if they want to implement additional steps or measures. And that's a conversation that the county commissioners and I have had with the health officer and the Montgomery County Health Department. And right now we are not taking any additional steps above and beyond what the governor has laid out.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at the guidelines for the red counties, some of which you just kind of went over. And I'm thinking as I'm looking at the social gatherings of any kind being limited to 25 people, any concern about kind of getting that message to folks as we are just basically literally kind of in that Christmas Eve, Christmas spot right now?
Well, communicating that right now is, I think, especially challenging because people are, they're off doing their thing as far as the holidays go. And so they're not really paying attention to their normal, sources of information per se. They're pretty focused on the holidays. So that is especially tough. And we knew that going as we looked ahead, when we didn't go red last week, then you have the realization that looking at the way the data was trending, that it was very possible this week on the 23rd, 2 days before Christmas, it is very difficult to really craft messaging and reach people, a couple of days before Christmas. So, we're doing our best. We're trying to reach out. We're trying to educate. But I think it's even more challenging this time of year than it is in normal times.
So Christmas is kind of upon us, and I know we haven't been talking about this as much, I feel, but, you think about New Year's Eve coming up. That's another kind of central gathering spot. I guess since I have you, what is the message for people who are still planning on gathering for the holidays? What can you tell them?
Well, we're discouraging those gatherings, and you have to think about, if you're gathering in a small area, enclosed area, in somebody's home, those kinds of things. The more people you have there, the more likely that you are to have somebody there who's positive, who can spread this virus to others. So, we're really trying to discourage those types of gatherings. And, the message is, we know it's not it's not pleasant, and people want to go on about their lives, but we just need to get through the next few months, and next year hopefully things will be somewhat back to normal and people can gather and follow their normal traditions. But you know, this year everybody's traditions are just messed up. I don't know how else to say it, mine included. You know, I won't be celebrating Christmas with my parents for the first time ever, and that's going to be strange. But you know, we want to keep them safe.
I wanted to ask too, looking over some of the fluctuations in the county's case counts. You know, just this month I saw, you know, two different days with a county record of 85 reported cases, and then some dips down into reported case numbers, you know, down into the teens. So to what are those big spikes being attributed? Do we know where those are coming from?
Well, typically what we're seeing is we'll see fluctuation in those numbers based on the lag from when they're tested. So, you know, if over the weekend we don't really have much testing happening, both of our free sites are not open on the weekend, and then, you know, the hospital site I don't think is open on the weekend. So, you know, you take that out 2 or 3 days, that first part of the week, you don't see big numbers, you know, like Tuesday, Wednesday. And it depends on the delay in getting results, which had been, you know, bumped up to 3 days, 4 days in some cases. I think now it's back down to a day. So that's kind of why we see the ups and downs. We kind of attribute it to the volume of testing that's happening and when those results come back. But, you know, consistently, we're seeing the same things. Our biggest concern is just understanding what these numbers mean. And, you know, Indiana came out yesterday and said, you know, they found an error in how they're calculating positivity rates, and that could throw numbers off, you know, and in smaller, more rural areas, maybe that number has been reported higher than it really is. And in the larger areas, maybe it's the opposite. And then we know here we've had some issues where some of the testing sites were not reporting their negative results. They were only reporting the positives. So that was pushing our positivity rate up higher. And when we saw a significant jump in our rate this week, we think some of it is due to that, because, you know, if a site is only reporting their positives, then they have 100% rate, you know, and that's going to push the overall number up. So we're working through that, and we have to take that into account as we make decisions. That number that's reported, is it really reflective of what's happening in the community, or are there other factors going on there?
Okay. And are you able to assess whether there was an impact from Thanksgiving gatherings? I know that was a concern for many health departments. I didn't know if that had been reflected for you guys locally.
Well, I mean, certainly we've seen the numbers go up. You know, I don't know that there's been really an ability to, you know, trace it back and say, oh, look, all these cases happened because of Thanksgiving gatherings, or is it just because of community spread that has, you know, really increased since Thanksgiving? To my knowledge, we don't have any solid data that says it was absolutely from Thanksgiving, but I'm sure that was a factor. There's no doubt about it. And that's probably the biggest thing that I think we in local government have struggled with is, you know, there's a lot of contact tracing going on, and we really need the results of that to make accurate, good, solid data-driven decisions. It's really tough to say we're going to target, you know, this industry or this segment of the community if we're not given contact tracing data that shows that's where it's spreading. So probably some big gaps there that we have to figure out. But I don't know that we can really point back and say, you know, X number of cases were from Thanksgiving gatherings. We just don't have that.
You are listening to Ask the Mayor on WBAA News. I'm your host, Emily Seiberg. And right now we're talking with Crawfordsville Mayor Todd Barton. Mayor, you've mentioned this, and last month we talked about strained COVID-19 testing capabilities in Montgomery County, and that new testing sites in the county were on the way, and those have opened. Has that eased some of the testing pressure? You know, how is that going in
general? It has. Yes, that has helped tremendously, and, you know, now someone in this community who needs to be tested or wants to be tested can get tested right here and doesn't have to travel to another community to do that. So, between, you know, the two different free sites, those are 5 days a week between the two of them. The hospital is still operating a site. There's some other, you know, smaller sites. So we have dramatically improved the capacity. And, you know, the sites were overwhelmed when we first did that, but I think we've seen that kind of plateau out. They're busy, they're booked, but you can usually get in within a day or two and get tested. So that's been a big help. And that's really showcases, I think, the collaboration and cooperation that happens in this community, because we have different, you know, we have county government kind of operating one site, city government kind of operating another site, working hand in hand to make this happen.
So COVID-19 vaccinations have arrived in Indiana, kind of a bright spot of the past couple of weeks. And right now the concentration for those vaccinations is on healthcare workers and long-term care residents. What can you tell us about what the vaccination process looks like so far in Montgomery County?
Well, I know our firefighter paramedics and public safety personnel are already in the process of getting, some of them have already received their vaccine, their first dose. So that piece is already playing out as we speak. And then from there, it's really a matter of planning community-wide how we move through those next steps. And the county has, the health department has a solid vaccine plan that we originally created during H1N1.
Okay.
Now that's been updated because there are things to think about here that we didn't think about H1N1. For example, you know, we can't crowd people into these lines and hold them there and then move them to the next point. Some of the key points that we had in the H1N1 model doesn't work with COVID. So we made some changes there. Been in communication even yet this afternoon with the health department here, and we're working on acquiring physical sites, if you will, so that we can set up, have the vaccine clinic type model available in different formats to fit different people's needs, and move a lot of people through very quickly. And I think you're going to see Crawfordsville and Montgomery County stand out as being rather unique in how we approach this. And again, that city-county collaboration and each kind of doing our thing and putting it together is really going to showcase what we're doing here. So we know the vaccine is on its way, and we're in the preparation mode right now. We're taking the steps to make sure that we have a solid plan and delivery system that we can implement it when it arrives.
Can you tell us about some of those unique aspects that's going to make it different in its implementation from other counties?
Well, I think people here will have different options, and I don't know that you're necessarily always going to have that in other counties. And you have to look back at the relationship that the city of Crawfordsville, especially our fire department and our community paramedics, have with the Indiana State Department of Health. They frequently look to Crawfordsville to be the model for other communities and to build programs that can be replicated elsewhere. If you think about mobile integrated health, and you think about Project Swaddle, and you think about our overdose program and things like that, those are all models that are funded through the State Department of Health, built in Crawfordsville so they can be replicated elsewhere. And I think you're going to see the same thing happen on the vaccine side, where they're saying, look, we have the health component, but we also need to pull public safety into this and create a model for public safety personnel delivering this vaccine as well. And every indication is that they'll look to Crawfordsville to create that model. So you'll see something a little different here because of that.
Where are vaccines for Montgomery County healthcare workers being given at this point?
So our healthcare workers are traveling to Lebanon, to Witham Hospital, for their vaccines.
And I know the county, as we've discussed before on the show, has certainly, as many places have been impacted by outbreaks at local long-term care facilities. Can you talk a little bit about the plan right now for vaccine rollouts in those places?
Well, our understanding is that the locals won't directly be involved in that rollout, that is done through the state, and that they have, for example, brought on Walgreens and CVS mm-hmm. pharmacies to deliver those vaccines. So I'm not sure, you know, I can't speak for the health department. They're probably more involved in that, but I've not seen much on that other than the fact that the state's going to take care of that side of it. And we're very concerned with our long-term care facilities. I mean, the fatality rate in our long-term care facilities has been very high, and it's very concerning. And the reality is that, you know, even though you restrict visitors, you still have employees coming and going every day. And I think that's been, for me, the area that we probably need to focus on a little bit more is ramp up testing on those employees. If they're going to be in there working around those high-risk patients, we need to really be aggressive with testing them and screening them.
And this is another, this is a big question, but, you know, what are you hearing and are you hearing from people who don't want to receive the vaccine? You know, is that a concern going forward for you and other local officials?
Yeah, it is a concern. And, you know, we've even heard that in our public safety community. I mean, not everyone who is currently eligible has signed up to receive the vaccine. And I think it's more of a hesitation that this is new and let's wait and see what happens and then kind of go from there. But I know, you know, we've looked at a lot of data and we've looked at a lot of information from people we trust, from physicians we trust, you know, and they've walked us through, you know, how this was developed. And, you know, it's tempting to say, well, it's developed so quickly, and I'm not sure it's been vetted properly. But if you really look back at the process of how vaccines are developed, they didn't just start this when COVID appeared on the scene. That process has been playing out for many, many years. So I'm very comfortable with it. I'm going to receive the vaccine when I'm eligible, and I'm encouraging others to do it. We are talking about how we roll out a campaign to put the public more at ease. And you know, we don't quite have that put together yet, but you know, we'll be doing everything we can to encourage people to step forward and get the vaccine. But ultimately, it's you know, people's own decision. They'll have to make that decision on their own.
And I know that, you know, the general population, and again, this is all very, very fluid, very dynamic, to use a word you said before the show started today. You know, in terms of when most of us are going to expect to receive this vaccine, so you might have a you know, a little bit of time to kind of pull that together. What do you think people need to hear to feel that it's okay to take this? You know, if you had to say, what could work?
I think they need to hear from sources that they trust, and they'll need to hear from their own physician, you know, someone that they build a relationship with, their own healthcare provider. And they'll need to hear from community leaders and, you know, across the board, but they'll have to hear from everyone. And I think it's one of those things that, you know, there's a lot of initial hesitation, but when they start seeing that, you know, others have gotten it and they're doing fine and they're, you know, kind of putting, if you will, COVID behind them and going on with their lives, you'll see that change over time and people will be more willing to step forward and do it. But there's always the fear of the unknown and putting something, you know, in your body, and there should be, but it has to be from sources that they trust. And you know, I think we all know that people are very leery of the government telling them something, so they'll need to hear it from their own healthcare providers and people like that.
So on the economic front, which we've discussed before, you know, a lot of holiday events and holiday shopping centered events were canceled or modified in Crawfordsville. That's true of lots of communities. I guess now that we're kind of looking back over the month of December, you know, how has this ultimately affected some local businesses? You know, what's the report card on that now that gift shopping is winding down? We're setting aside last minute shoppers here, but.
Yeah, we simply don't know yet. You know, I'm sure we will get that report card in January, early January. Things appear to be pretty robust and people are shopping and you know, doing things. But, you know, I've not had any direct feedback from local businesses one way or the other. So I'm sure we'll hear from them, you know, when this is over and kind of see what happened. You know, again, we went into this in strong position, you know, stayed in pretty strong position throughout the year and really didn't lose any restaurants or small businesses directly related to this. I mean, we did have some coming and going, which is normal. So we're hopeful and we're optimistic, but, you know, there's no doubt in my mind that if we went through another shutdown type scenario, stay-at-home order, we would probably lose quite a few small businesses because I don't think they could weather the storm a second time.
So what do small businesses in Crawfordsville need to survive, you know, into 2021 and beyond, you know? For example, we're looking at a federal COVID-19 relief bill that does offer some help through more Paycheck Protection Program funds. Do we just need to be giving people more money to keep the doors open?
Well, they need support from the local community, and I think they get that. But I think people just need to be more aware than ever when they think about where they're going to spend their money, that they spend it locally and they support those smaller businesses. The larger ones, they're going to do okay and they're going to get by. But if you think about those smaller ones, it can really make a difference how people here locally spend their money. So I think that's probably the biggest thing. And then for us, in local government, just to be very in tune to what's happening and try to help fill any gaps that we can fill, doing things to create that environment that helps them as they move forward. And time's just going to tell, if things start ramping up and going back to somewhat normalcy by late spring, early summer, hopefully most of them can weather it and get through that.
So earlier this month, I saw the Journal Review reported on some forward movement with the Ben-Hur project, the possibility of construction beginning on that early in this coming year. I saw you were quoted as saying that when that construction might start is the number one asked question in Crawfordsville. So where do things stand right now with this project? What is the update there?
Well, we've buttoned up everything on our end that needed to happen. So there were a whole series of steps that had to happen within city government and county government. All those steps are done and taken care of. So at this point, the ball is really in the developer's court, and they'll have to take it and move forward. Anytime you have a property like this and you have a transfer like this, there are all kinds of things that have to be tidied up. And in this case, those things just kind of drug out longer than we really would have liked, and partially because of COVID. I mean, that's a reality, is that things are moving much more slowly than normal. For example, the assessed value of the building, when you're looking at using TIF and things like that, that becomes a very big issue. And it just took months and months to get through that and get it where it was supposed to be. But all that's done now, and all that's behind us. And, come January, we should see things really start to move forward and things start to happen. I can tell you that we're at the make or break point. And if things don't start to happen in January, February, somewhere in there, I then become very concerned about it. But we've done everything on our end, so it should move forward.
So I guess more broadly, we're talking about kind of economic development. How does a project like this help assist economic development in downtown Crawfordsville?
Well, this particular project is about putting people into downtown combined with saving and rehabilitating a historic building. But the more people you have in your downtown, all the other businesses flourish because of that. And so this is not a pure economic development project from the standpoint of, somebody's building a factory or something like that. But it is very important in our community that we're able to bring people in. There's a lot of different events happening here. And this is really a different market than the hotels by the interstate. This is more of a focus on the events, and the events in the downtown and the events with the college and the aquatic center and so forth. And it is, at the end of the day, it's about activity and people. And that's really what we're after here while saving this building. And we've looked at every scenario imaginable to reuse this building, offices and so on, retail, go down the list. And this really turned out to be the highest and best use that we could come up with. On the economic development front, though, things continue to be very strong, and I'm very optimistic about that. The number of leads that we get is down, but the quality or the seriousness of those leads is up dramatically. So you don't have that flood of, just these random leads coming through all the time, but the ones you do get are very focused and very serious. And we're working some really good potential projects right now that could bear fruit in 2021.
So the city applied for a grant to, it looks like, take a look at its stormwater and wastewater systems. First of all, I wanted to ask, what shape are those systems in right now?
Well, what we're doing there primarily is focused on stormwater, but we did pull wastewater in because our wastewater just underwent a major upgrade in the last few years. But stormwater, what's really happened there, you have to rewind about 10 years. But, the city implemented a stormwater program and it started assessing property owners a stormwater fee. When I became mayor, we really started trying to tackle our problematic areas. you know, and we just had to prioritize. We said areas where water is getting in people's homes is a top priority. Water in their yard is a second priority. And then, you know, water out in the street becomes third priority. And so we've worked through a lot of those areas. But we really don't have a comprehensive plan about, you know, really spelling out how we move forward, how we prioritize projects over the coming years, and where we're going with this. And so we've tackled the worst neighborhoods. We've alleviated a lot of problems, but we really need a solid plan for moving forward. And the reality is that it's dynamic, it's changing, because the amount of rainfall we're getting annually is much higher than it used to be. So our system was not designed for this. At the same time, a lot of the agricultural land around the city has had tiling installed, and a lot of that water gets dumped into the system quicker, and some of our neighborhoods are on the periphery, and that water makes its way into our neighborhoods. So areas that were not a problem 10 years ago now are a problem. So we need a comprehensive plan to help us plot out how we move forward and address these areas.
So once you've kind of established what you think needs to happen, you know, what do the next steps look like?
Well, that'll be a multi-year plan, and we know that we will only do a certain amount per year. There's certainly no desire out there to increase what we're assessing or anything like that. I think it's fine where it's at, but we need to really spell out what projects we do, you know, in year one versus year two and down the line. And like I said, it's a multi-year process, and I feel good that we have a plan in place and know where we're headed.
So since it's December, I've been putting some year-end questions to the various mayors on our show. It's been quite a year like no other, I would say. So looking back, I guess, first of all, what did you not accomplish this year? You know, what had to get moved off of the city's agenda that you wish you could have done, but events overtook it?
Boy, you know, when I think back, we went into 2020 full steam and with so much momentum, with a lot of different things, but really trying to tackle the housing issue in our community, that, you know, we don't have enough housing, and the economic development side, things were just going really, really well. All of that got derailed and sidetracked because of the COVID response. And, you know, we didn't get as far on those things as I'd like to have gotten. But I'm confident we're going to pick those up. We're going to have some housing announcements in early 2021 and other things, you know, along the economic development front. So it's like nothing really stopped, but it all just slowed down tremendously. And you have to remember that for us, or at least for me in local government, there was not only the COVID situation. We had a lot to deal with this summer with the racial questions that took a lot of our time.
That is all of our time for today. Mayor Barton, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank
as
you.
Always. You can find this program at our website, WBAA.org, along with an archive of our shows with the mayors of Lafayette, West Lafayette, Frankfort, and Crawfordsville. Send us your questions to ask@WBAA.org. Thanks for listening, and have a great rest of the day.